Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Thursday, the 10th, isn't it, today, of February. It's now about 10 minutes after the hour of 9 a.m. And we have one item on our agenda this morning. Senator Dyson, and I see your erstwhile sidekick, Mr. Schultz, over there. If you'll come forward, we're looking still at SJR number one. And if you gentlemen will put yourself on the record for us this morning, we'll be eager to proceed.
Senator Fred Dyson, the order. Lucky Schultz staff, Senator Dyson.
Now, where were we yesterday, Senator Dyson?
As we understood it, sir, we were instructed to prepare two amendments to the SJR 1. One was to clarify that the base year would be, in essence, the previous year for which we had full data, so actually it's about 2 years back. We have provided a committee substitute, it's the F version, hopefully it's in front of you, and changed language on page one is highlighted, I hope, in yellow.
Just on yours.
All right, I'm sorry.
Where is it?
Lines 8 and 9.
Okay. That reads, line date does not exceed the amount appropriated for the fiscal year 2 years preceding the current fiscal year by more than the product of that, et cetera.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Right. And the second one was the language that you suggested, Mr. Chairman. Look on page 4, subparagraph L.
Starting at line 27.
Yes, sir. And it continues through line 10 on page 5, and the new paragraph there, M, is the language you suggested. The legislature, if by law, the legislature's page 7, page 5, declares an extraordinary circumstance, an affirmative vote, 2/3, and so on.
And by leaving the language regarding any veto and override out, the standard procedure applies.
Yes, sir. So, and Mr. Schultz can answer any questions about these additions.
Okay.
Slightly different wording here on page one than what you suggested, and it was our alleged legal people's opinion that this better fit, and Mr. Schultz can explain that.
First, do we have a motion for backslash F as our working document this morning?
Yeah, I move that backslash F working document be adopted for.
We'll just object for the purpose of discussion. Proceed forward, Mr. Schultz.
The language that you suggested yesterday, requested yesterday, says for the year under consideration. We've not taken the words under consideration, but instead are saying for the current fiscal year.
Okay.
That's consistent with how it's used throughout the rest of the document.
Any questions on that? Okay, let's go turn our attention then to the section starting on page 27, line 4. Page 4, line 27. Not 27 pages here, are there? Questions on this section? Give the members a minute just to form it, take a look, see if we can catch you doing anything sly there.
I don't think there were any changes to subsection L.
Just M.
It was adding subsection F, yeah, giving the legislature the ability to create its own. Or to declare it
first. So I'm assuming now, and correct me if I'm wrong, members and Senator Dyson, and by saying if the legislature by law declares, we're saying that through introduction of a bill that would receive a majority vote from the members of the legislature that an extraordinary circumstance exists, we would begin the process.
That's exactly right.
So any member could introduce the bill, or committee could introduce the bill, in order to proceed forward.
Yes. And it takes supermajority, two-thirds, and it has to pass the court of both houses, therefore becoming law.
And only by constitutional mandate can the legislature be required to have a two-thirds vote. Is that correct? As I understand the rules, the uniform rules of the legislature in Mason's Manual and our uniform rules, any other vote of the legislature can only be by a majority vote, be required to be a majority vote, but only through a constitutional mandate can we require more than a majority vote. Is that correct, Ms. Senator Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, we had a number of procedural votes. Taking up a bill, second or third reading on the same day requires, but that's moving a step forward. Actual voting to approve something, you're right, it's just a simple majority.
Right. Senator French, did you have a question?
Well, I just hate to split hairs, and maybe I am, but I just want to make sure.
Do them now.
Sure. What does it take to declare the extraordinary circumstances? Is it your sort of vision that there'd be one bill to pass through both houses by a two-thirds majority, and that bill would contain a declaration that there's an extraordinary circumstance?
Yes, sir.
It wouldn't take some, you wouldn't have to first declare an extraordinary circumstance and then take up a extraordinary appropriation.
Yeah. What I anticipate is that the legislature calls itself into session, or if we are in session, the bill is introduced. So if we're not in session, the legislature calls itself into session. If the bill passes, then there is a declaration of extraordinary circumstances. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of nice people down here talking with them.
But it's in essence one legislative vehicle, one legislative appropriation, and in that appropriation somewhere there'd be a sentence that says there's an extraordinary circumstance that requires this appropriation.
Yes, sir.
I see.
And therefore is exempt from the constitutional limit on spending.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Huggins?
Senator Dyson, for my education, one of the points is a plan for recovering the amount of newly appropriated money or appropriated under this subsection. Does that essentially mean that the residue, if it's not all spent or obligated, or what does recovery mean? That's under the governor's proposal.
To the chair, Senator Huggins, the intent there is that when you have an extraordinary circumstance, you're going to exceed the limit. You need to have some plan for getting back to a normal level of appropriations and expenditures. For instance, if we're going to build a natural gas line, there's rationale for spending the money if in the future you see a return on the investment to get it back to normal or to a better situation. Essentially, it's saying you're going to have to demonstrate a favorable return on the investment for that extraordinary circumstance. If not, it's still up to the legislature if the governor comes and says there is no plan, you can agree with what he says or she says or not.
The plan does not necessarily have to be rational. It's a plan, is always what you say.
You, the legislature, have. You need to have it presented to you so that you can look at it, either debate it or agree or disagree with the governor why there should be an extraordinary circumstance and how you're going to recover from that situation.
If I might take that one step further, I mean, I realize it would be a real aberration, but let's just say that we went through this process, money was appropriated, and for some reason there was some residue when it was left over. Is there a mechanism for what happens to the residue, excess monies?
Through the chair, Secretary Huggins, I don't believe so.
Okay. It may not be required. I mean, it certainly would be an aberration.
Senator Terrio.
Well, any appropriation either has to be an operating appropriation or capital appropriation. Operating appropriation can't live beyond the fiscal year.
Swept.
Capital appropriation generally has 5 years.
And then lapses to
the general fund.
General fund.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
And I was answering the wrong question, but still an interesting point. If indeed, I mean, I expect extraordinary circumstances will be opportunities and so on and so forth. And there should, as Mr. Schultz said, be a payout for that. Problem is, we've got to expend the money for several years, like building a gas pipeline, before we see any return on our investment, which might be 7 or 8 years. So, you know, we expect when somebody makes a presentation about extraordinary circumstances, if there is a business reason for doing it, and it's a long-term payout, we've got to make a big upfront investment, and so on and so forth. There may be the circumstance where it doesn't work out. You know, we've seen several of those here lately, you know, and those will happen. If it doesn't have a business payout, I kind of anticipate most of those aren't extraordinary circumstances, they're emergency. We got a whole bunch of damage somewhere, you know, that we had to deal with, and so on and so forth, which is a separate, somewhat related occurrence that we provided for.
Senator Huggins.
So you're saying that emergencies, this is not applicable to an emergency?
We have two separate provisions here.
But, and I think even then, it doesn't mandate that the plan may be we're going to have to increase the taxes on, or the plan may be we're going to have to use funds from the earnings reserve. The plan may be we'll have to do something else. It doesn't mean that that plan actually has to be executed at that time, but it's a plan. You know, I don't think it mandates that along with passing the bill, you require the plan to be executed as much as you provide that there is a reasonable plan to do that.
The requirement is that a certain minimal amount of information has to be given to the legislature when it's declared.
Further question?
I don't have any questions on this section. I do have some back on the very first section we dealt with.
Okay. Senator Huggins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, Senator Dyson, this is just for my education, but as I read below line 8 and 9, it has some rather, I won't call it complicated, simple language, but when you start a computation factor for how you're making this work, and my concern in the macro is whether this is a mushy process that two different people could come up with two different solutions as far as what we're talking about. As an example, a piece here says, however, the percentage change in the consumer price index shall be no greater than the percentage change in personal income of state residents. Is that a timely number that's produced by an agency that supports us, or where do we get that sort of information?
Through the Chair, Senator Huggins, we do get the information on a relatively timely basis from various entities, and I do have a listing showing where it comes from and when.
I mean, you don't have to prove that to me. This is for my education, because this language is a little bit foreign to me.
The information does come in at about the same time as the information for population and inflation comes in.
Okay. So we feel comfortable with that language.
Is that the Department of Labor that has that, or Department of Revenue?
I forget which one provides this particular information, but we get some from Department of from federal agency and some from state agencies, depending on which one it is.
I believe that comes from the Department of Labor, but don't quote me for sure.
That's my recollection.
I think too, it's good. I think as we discussed through this prior terms last year, Senator Huggins, that CPI is a number that's a relative number, but for an example, it may be a little more inflated than the actual increase because it is based on new construction, for an example, on homes, rather than the selling price of homes in the marketplace. So you're always maybe a little higher up with CPI than you would be in real inflation in terms of the marketplace. So by gauging it to personal income, we're gauging it more on the overall experience of the people in the state of Alaska relative to what really comes into the family checkbook, and is a pretty good gauge of the general health of the economy.
Yeah. My concern was one of, as I read through this, if two different mathematicians substituted the language in their equation where they would come up with the same solution, and so it was just consistent, so we didn't have people that come to their own conclusion, and not just that part, but the language up above it, which talks about change in the number of residents and things of that nature, the variables and plus one.
I'm not sure we could ever do that.
Right.
That will be a deliberative process.
Yeah.
Because the legislature will sit, the experts will come and tell us what their number is. Very bright people, like some sitting in this room, will challenge that, and they will come up with some confidence that the numbers aren't cooked. And then we will agree on what those numbers are that, right, that go into it.
Yeah, I find this very fascinating in the respect of, I'm generally supportive, but in the same token, we've all seen and heard the innuendos of how you circumnavigate and find larger holes in the mesh of the net sort of thing, so it becomes ineffective based on the things we're trying to put into place to make it work.
And we have on this year issue 24, 25 years of experience of watching a constitutional spending limit not work. And the advantage of watching others trying to deal with this. So we're standing up. We've learned a lot from what we've seen in the past, trying to get better, smarter.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're not going to get too deep into the numbers. That's the business of a different committee, but I did want to talk about one of the sort of fundamental assumptions or fundamental underlying assumptions of the spending cap proposed here, and that's the base, the number you start from that you build your future numbers off of. And so, your Senator Dyson, or perhaps you, Mr. Schultz, can talk a little bit about that.
It was a spirited discussion last year, and by and large, the administration has been supportive. We had a lot of conversation about what numbers do we plug into this. And before we were, in the last year's edition, we were dealing with a rolling five-year average, and then we were trying to plug values in there that would get us to reality, and there have been a couple of big dips in the process, or in the expenditures that had made that look real strange. And so this year we have gone away from that rolling five-year average, but indeed the number that we have started out with here is what our best guess on the 10th of February of what the budget we will do this year will take into account, sticking money in there for the PERS TERS thing to give us a base that is realistic on what it's going to be. That'll get changed over the next probably 40 days and so on. And when we come back to you, we'll have hopefully the best number that the best sources we have around have for that. But it's an excellent question.
If I can just follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just kind of looking forward, if this were to pass out of the legislature, it would be on the ballot in 06. When we came back to work, or whoever came back to work here in the legislature in January 07, they'd begin working on the 08 budget. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So if this were to become law, writing the 08 budget under this spending cap, the theory is that you'd look back to 06 as your base number. Is that right? Okay, I just want to make sure I understand. And would we be using, under the way this is written now, would we be using the number we're going to plug in, if you will, or are we going to actually go back in 08 and look at the 06 actuals?
To the Chair, Senator French, we will use an established number for transitional purposes.
The plug-in number.
That gives us the ability to look at the expected PERS and TERS, Medicaid costs, things like that that we have to contend with.
And if I just want to look, what is that number, just so I can write something down here?
My crystal ball isn't very effective right now, sir, but as Senator Dyson said, what we're going to do is, I have a number put in the bill that I came up with in November, when we started drafting it for pre-filing. That's going to be changed as we, I now know what the governor's budget is. It's going to be changed as we discuss with the folks in Senate Finance. If
probably when it comes back to you if you're not happy with the number that they come up with.
I guess I just need some frame of reference. I'm not on the finance committee, and so I just need
the number I have. Using for FY 06 is the governor's number of 3.282 billion.
Okay.
Because that's the best guess I have.
It's just a number that you had available.
You've got to put something there, and that's the best number you have.
In the bill, it shows FY 06 as being 3.25 because I didn't know what the governor was stabbed in the dark at that point.
And you'll have. We'll talk about what we appropriated for the budget as well as what we came back with supplementals to come up with a complete picture.
Yes, sir. One of the things you have to look at, too, again, is not just what's the budget going to be for FY08, but what does this curve have, the impact it's going to have for the future? What are the expectations for PERS and TERS and other costs that have to be taken into consideration for the future?
Senator French.
Thank you. I promise this will be my last numbers question because we're not going to get into this, but I just have to ask. The column that I see on your chart,
yes,
that has the 3.282 number on it, indicates that that's a 6.35% annual change. Is that the difference between last year and this year?
FY05 and FY06.
Okay. Would the spending cap, had it been in place, allowed that great an increase in spending?
I'm not sure, so I have to go back and find out what the spending cap was last year. I think it would have, because I think we were looking at something in the neighborhood of 3.4 billion, as I recall, off the top of my head, for this was the last number that the House and the Senate argued about last year, or having as a transitional number to do it.
I guess I misstated my question. If we took the FY04 actuals and use the formula that this spending cap envisions, and the formula this spending cap envisions, would you have been able to get to a 6.35% increase in government spending this year?
To the chair, Senator French, I don't know, because we use a transitional number, and I have not applied it to what the actuals were.
By the time we get to finance, someone will play with it, and we'll thank you for your answer. I don't want to belabor the point, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson, go ahead.
Just a raw look at the numbers. The population is going up 1.5-2%. Inflation has been two or three. Yeah,
right.
And so on and so forth. And you got 2 years of adding those. Mm-hmm. So it'll be very close. But this cap, depending on how you view the governor's budgets and some interesting things he has done with the presentation of spreading spending back and forward, the way an old fisherman looks at it, this would not allow as much of an expansion as the governor is requesting, the way an old fisherman looks at it. Governor's budget request. And a very key thing for all of us to look at, particularly you, is the number there that talks about the estimated limit going up and the annual growth. You know, you can see in the out years it allows 68, 64, 71, 67, and increases in those years going out there. And those are additive. So
it's year on year. It's not,
yes, sir.
Right. I understand.
Yeah,
but my question was prompted by the fact that I see this $196 million growth in the FY06 column, which is far greater than any other number I see out in the future. So my sense is that your formula wouldn't allow such a big expansion, but maybe that my assumptions are off.
And Lucky can correct me here, but I think that's the number we put in trying to anticipate with the first capital infusion. Is that good? The technical buzzword there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I think this, it'll always lag a little bit actual. If there's a bump in population expansion for a construction period, it'll lag a little behind that. And then when that bump in population goes away for an example, for a construction period, it'll lag a little bit before it gets back to reality on the downside. So, but I think, is there anything else that we need to look at as a Judiciary Committee on the bill? Seeing none, we have before us version Foxtrot of this bill. Is there a motion from the Vice Chair?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Where we left things, there was a motion to adopt it as a working document. You objected.
Well, I remove my objection. You're right, Senator Theriault. Thank you for reminding me.
And then you ask, is there a further objection?
Is there any further objection? None. Seeing none.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Chair, I move that.
Oh, and my wife reminds me to do this.
It's committee work. It's work. It's group work.
You're doing good.
That version / Foxtrot, that the two amendments given us as written be adopted.
And we have adopted those in adopting the work, the CS. So now we just need to move the bill forward.
Okay, I stand corrected then.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move this out of committee.
Okay, and I think there's a zero fiscal note. Is that correct?
No, there is a small
fiscal note. Small fiscal note? I'm sorry.
For this year, 1.5 thousand.
Yeah, right. There's zero for this year. With the attached fiscal notes, we'll move it forward. This bill, the motion has been to move the bill forward with, and with that, of course, with individual recommendations. Is there any objection to that, Senator Theriault?
We've talked about, you know, finance will do their thing, and we have these committees that burrow down in areas of
right.
You know, specifics, but I always reserve the right to look at something for the financial implications
right.
of social service.
Absolutely.
And so I did
talk with the Senate President and told him that the sponsor and the committee would like to reserve the opportunity to request it back to committee after the Finance Committee's done to take a look at constitutional issues, and he saw no problem with that whatsoever. So we'll continue to watch this bill with great anticipation. The bill is advanced to the next committee, and is there anything else to come before this committee this morning? Committee is adjourned.